So welcome back to the third and final hour of this special edition of Narsil in Action. Thank you, Mr. Producer, for the lovely transition. Thank you for the lovely transition, and we're back in our final hour of Narsil in Action. And we're going to have some board members here. And I don't know, Andy, how many people do we have on Discord that are going to be from the board? So I can introduce
Brenda might be the only one. I'm going to unmute. We've been working on her sound issues, so she might be available on Discord.
We have Richard also. He's on the telephone, so we can get him back. And then and I was hoping to have Robin, so but we at least have a couple of board members, including me. So in this final hour, we're going to try to clear out those calls that were carried over, and then we're going to have a discussion with the board, questions, comments, whatever you want to talk about. Again, like I said, when we went to questions previously, please don't try to tell a story. We could spend a whole hour or the entire 3 hours hearing a story about some of these horrendous things. The stories they're similar, and they're tragic. And once we've heard the story, trust me, we've heard something very similar, and it doesn't change the problem. It's something that's personal to you, but it's affecting tens of thousands of people. Your son is not the only one who got convicted on a strict liability offense for having consensual sex with a minor. There's thousands more just like your son or your nephew. And there's a lot of similarity in this. The heavy-handed prosecutor. I mean, we know all that stuff, but what we don't know is how we can motivate more people to help us with solutions, and what we're doing that we may be doing not as well as we could do, and what we could improve upon. And that's why we want to have this interaction on a somewhat regular basis with the board and with our supporters. So let's go back to the telephone, because the queue is still full, and I'm going to take people I haven't taken. Those that have already had a question, I'm not going to be able to get back to you at this round. Now, if you have a question for the board, or a comment for the board, but the people that I know we're holding over who have not previously been in, I'm going to take those right away. And King, are you here? All right, let's see if we can give some quick questions and answers. So area code 334, you are on. What is your question for Mr. Alexander?
Yes, I wanted to ask, I have a son that is a sex offender, and he has a four-year-old child. What state would allow that child to live with a sex offender parent, or even attend a school, or to take the child to school or an event?
Her question is, what state would permit a parent with a four-year-old child? And I think that that's going to require more detail than what we can get into. But as a general rule, the state has to have compelling reasons to separate the child from their parents. So is this a child that was not in any way related to the offense?
That is correct. The child was not related to the victim, the offense.
And I'm going to tell you that's generally a service that we don't try to provide, because there's so many nuances of trying to state shop. And if a national organization is encouraging people to go to a particular state, that state's going to look at their policies and their rules very quickly, and they're going to. So, but what I can tell you in addition to that is that you don't, if you have a state conviction. Is this a state or federal conviction? Caller, is this a state or
it's
federal?
It's a federal conviction? Because my son was in the military.
Okay. Well, then he has more options theoretically than people who are, if you have a state conviction, you're going to have to go through the interstate compact transfer process, and I don't have any qualifications to talk about how the federal system works, but on the state system, I teach that in terms of the interstate compact, but I don't feel qualified to tell you what the process is going to be moving from state to state.
Okay. I've checked several states, 4 or 5 states, and most of them say that the child cannot live in the same home. Now, this is the probation officers that I'm checking with for that state.
So, well, are you checking with the probation officials that will actually be supervising him? Because you've identified he would not be under state control if he's got a federal conviction. I mean, he'd be under the state registry,
right?
But he would not be under the state supervision regime. So, are you talking to the right supervising authorities when you're posing this question?
I do not know that.
Well, are you calling state officials or federal officials?
State.
You probably would get better answers if you were to contact with someone who deals with military convictions and what type of supervision they're going to have. And I don't think calling probation officers would be a course of action I would recommend to try to find out the answers to these questions. I would probably recommend calling. I know it's hard because you're trying to call and get screened through a law office and say, well, I've got a hypothetical situation. I've got a son who's got this problem, and we'd like to know if he can come to your state. And the call screener at the law office is going to say, well, do you have a case against you? So but the answer is you're going to get better answers talking to a legal professional that deals with people who have federal convictions, who have military convictions.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and I'm taking down your number. I'm going to try to call you because I may have an idea too. So did you mind if I call you in the coming days?
I would love that.
So could I get your first name? That. I've got your phone number right here. I can put a first name with it.
Debbie.
Okay, Debbie. I'll try to reach out to you within a week.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Debbie.
Thanks.
All right. Area code 850, you have not been on. Go ahead. What segment is this?
Hey, this, King, this is just
ask the board here, but King's holding over for a few minutes.
Hey, King, Joe Pratt in Florida. I'm involved with Florida Action Committee. And some of my friends or some of your friends out there, who like Ellen Boffman and Shauna Baldwin, too. It was nice to see that Louisiana just reenfranchised all their felons, even violent offenders. That was pretty nice, even on parole and probation. That was a nice victory in your neck of the woods, you know? That's right. Right. And here in Florida, with Amendment 4, of course, they excluded people convicted of homicides and sex crimes, but recently in legislation, they're trying to create a poll tax for convicted felons who can vote, so they're trying to still screw felons from voting in Florida, which is kind of heartbreaking, but that's just, you know. And going back to the lodging one, because someone mentioned the lodging one, ACLU of main office in New York and ACLU of Florida have pro bono talked to the House and Senate Florida to not do that, so. There was a thing from Florida Action Committee that ACLU main office in New York and ACLU Florida have teamed up to say, don't do that. Don't screw registered citizens from staying at lodging. So there is some legal help out there coming from the ACLUs, because I saw an email from Gail too. So.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. Thanks for listening. I'm going to try my best to find Will, who has been texting me, and Will promised to have him on top of the hour. We're almost past the top of the hour. So, Will, I need you in the queue because I can't find the number that you texted me from anywhere on the calling board. So I need a number in the queue, and I need you to text me so I can exactly get you on as quickly as possible. So calling all Wills. So, all right, we're going to take one more caller while we're trying to find Will. Area code 340. You're on. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Good evening, and I'm very grateful for everybody that chimes in and does their justice for all of us. My question is this: my offense was committed in Florida. I moved from Florida. I live in a U.S. territory. However, when I visit Florida, my parents, the problem there is after 3 days, you obviously report to the sheriff's office. After 3 days, if you stay more than 3 days, you have to go to the DMV to get a state ID. Now, the question is, I've done this before. I go to the sheriff's office, then I go to the DMV. And when I go to the DMV, everybody looks at you like you've got three holes in your head. No one in the whole state understands all of the legislation and the bills that get passed and all the things that they do to try to trip you up. I'm going to visit my parents again very soon. My fear is I'll go check in with the sheriff's office, and they'll always look at me, why are you even here? Because they don't know the law. And then I proceed to the DMV, and then again, they're going to look at me, you don't need an ID, you don't live here, you live in U.S. territory. I'm not asking for legal advice, but what do I do to make sure that I'm not usurping the law, doing something illegal? Do I wear a cop cam everywhere and record everything I do? I'm perplexed.
Well, I would say in response to
thank you.
I would say in response to the caller, I've not heard that if you're only on a visitation status and not intend to become a student or become employed or become a resident, I've not heard that Florida requires you to get a driver's license to be temporarily present. What I have heard is that they'll put you on the registry and never release you even when you return to your state. That's what I have heard. So, but
correct, correct, correct.
So, all right.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. I'm going to try to see if this is the person we're looking for. Is this Will? Area code 312. Does this happen to be Will?
Yep, I think it is.
Okay. Hello, Will.
Can you hear me?
Will is our wonderful asset in Illinois. I don't know the title, but I know that you're a leader in Illinois Voices, and Will has a publication that is just wonderful. So if you can have 2 or 3 minutes to talk about Illinois Voices and your publication.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. I appreciate you giving me the time. I am the executive director at Illinois Voices. We were working closely with Mark and Adele on these lawsuits and a number of other ones. And just a real quick question answer to the question that people were asking about the task force. Illinois Voices has formed our own committee to try to get some legislation introduced to try to enact some of the recommendations that were made by the task force. The first one we're going to try and introduce is a grandfather clause to keep people from being forced to move if a daycare opens within 500 feet. So we are actively working towards that, the recommendations from that task force. So there's a lot of them, and really nothing will get done if we don't do it, because nobody else is going to jump out there and start introducing bills if we don't do it. So we are working diligently towards that effort. And then just a quick note about Lifetimes Magazine. We just entered our second year of Lifetimes Magazine. Just yesterday, I shipped out our spring edition. We started Lifetimes Magazine, very similar to what Narsal is doing with the Humans on the Registry. It's a way to showcase some of the positive stories of people who are finding joy and happiness in their life despite the burden of being on a registry. So we're not really an advocacy magazine as much as we are a lifestyle magazine. So we highlight stories of people who have success, and we also offer tips and suggestions on everything from, you know, how to talk to people in a relationship to how to talk to people when you go to apply for a job, and then just some other things about messaging and vocabulary that people use when they talk about themselves. So it's designed to be a very positive and upbeat magazine. It's a full color print only magazine, and we publish it 4 times a year. In each of the seasons. And again, our spring edition just went out. So if anybody is interested in subscribing to the magazine, you can go to our website at lifetimesmagazine.org. It's $35 for a year. And again, that's 4 issues of and it's 34 pages, full color glossy magazine. So the people that are subscribing are emailing us back and telling us that they absolutely love the magazine and they love the concept. So we would love to have you guys check it out.
Well, it's a fantastic looking publication, and what we can do, Will, I suspect most of the people who are on this call have gotten where you're in our Digest magazine, and you're widely known. But I wouldn't mind if I can get a show notes summary out to people. We could put something in here linking people to the magazine. I just need your help on that. What you want to say, but I'd like to do that for you. Because we certainly endorse what you're doing and wish you the greatest success, and you are guys in Illinois are really doing some fantastic work.
We are doing what we can do. It's a struggle, like everybody in any of the states known, and everybody in Narsal knows it's a daily struggle. But I do feel like we're chipping away and making a little bit of progress. So I'm pleased with that.
Well, you've got so much going on that I can't even track it all. Scott sends me stuff that I file away and says, this is Illinois, but I would be delighted for us to do more of these calls. There's more state specific because, contrary to popular belief, there's a lot of crossover. It may not be happening like the lawsuit that we're conjuring up in Georgia right now for the sheriffs in Georgia. There's two of them that erected signs or required the offender to erect signs on Halloween Day saying no trick-or-treating. Well, you may not have that in your state right now. And you may say, well, what does that have to do with us? Well, it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with you at this moment. But those sheriffs in Georgia do travel to national conventions, and they talk among themselves. And all it takes is those sheriffs saying, well, you know what I've been doing? I've been putting signs in these scoundrels' yards. Ain't nothing been done about it. And I get covered on Channel 11 News every Halloween. And first thing you know, it's happening in your state. Well, just this problem we talked about in Illinois with the mandatory supervised release, that may not be happening in your state in the same way. But there's a lot of transition because people move from one state to the other, and there's a lot of crossover. So I would like to have more state-specific calls, but I would like to see all the states promoting the calls because stuff does have relevance, even if it's not an immediate problem in a particular state. So that's what I'd like to invite people that have ideas, including you, Will. If you guys want to help put together one of these programs, we can do it.
Great. You know, and the flip side is true to that as well. Not only does the bad news travel, but so does the good news. So that's why I asked Adele about, you know, how this case can impact other cases, because when you listen to the words that the judges are using when they strike down these laws, those words and those ideas become fodder for other states to use. I mean, you look at what the state's attorney in Michigan just said, and those, her words are gold for being used in lawsuits. And the same with the Sixth Circuit case. You read the rulings and what the judges are saying, and you take that language and you apply it in another state and say, look, this judge already said this is punitive or this is, you know, ex post facto or whatever. So I absolutely think it's great for states to be sharing that information with each other,
and we'll give you that forum. It's just a lot of work to put one of these together single-handedly, and that's why we went several months without one. But the states are invited. Those of you have things going on and want to share them, we can open this format up to you, and we can share the good things, because this like what happened in Illinois, that got me fired up in my state, because I say, well, gee, I've been hearing this for years. This problem's been a problem for years, mm-hmm. and we didn't think it could be tackled. We didn't have anywhere near enough resources at the time this got on my radar. We now have a few more financial resources, and we now have a U.S. District Court opinion that we can, and we can probably get a lot of help from those attorneys that did the Illinois case to minimize how much work we're going to have to do. So we're all in right. this together. We're all working in this together.
Absolutely.
So, thank you, Will, and I'll be glad to get the word out. So,
all right, thank you for your time.
All right, now let's see, what board members do we have, Andy, that are ready to go live?
We definitely have Brenda. Yep, Brenda.
Hi, Brenda. Are you have a microphone open?
I think I do.
Sweet.
You do indeed. This is Brenda Jones, who serves on the board of directors, and she is the executive director, a very, very underpaid executive director, because she gets no compensation. She gets a lot of grief from people like me who give her a hard time, and others, and very little recognition. So you are recognized, your shout out for all you do, in particular, putting up with me.
I feel especially recognized. Thank you, Larry.
So. And we have Richard, if we can fish him out again, if he's in a quieter location. I had him, but the thing keeps bopping around because people are dropping in and out on the call. So he's gone off of the screen for the moment, but we can bring Richard. But we're looking for Richard. If Andy can help with that, I'd be gratefully appreciate that. There he is. I've got him. All right. So this is Richard.
Good evening.
Chair of the Conference Planning Committee, and he serves on the NARSOL Board of Directors, and he lives up in the great state of New Hampshire.
Except when he doesn't.
That includes tonight.
And we have our communications director. She texted me and said she's here, and I haven't been able to find her. So that's very disturbing. How is she here, but yet I can't find her?
I have no answer for you.
If you're on the telephone, if you called in, Sandy, you need to do *6 so we can get you up here. If you're on any other method, I can't advise you on that because I don't understand all these other methods of connection. So our tech guru will have to get you on if you're not on the telephone. I don't see anything that looks like a number from 713 area. Oh, whoops. I just think I just passed it. There she is. She is now live. You are now, I don't know how I kept looking over you. Welcome, Sandy.
Hello.
Glad
are
you
could hearing
join
me?
Us. We hear you just fine. And Sandy.
Very good.
Sandy is our communications director and does so many things. I don't think that would even begin to cover what she does, but she does press releases and social media. And she also listens to me gripe and helps me with projects and doesn't get enough recognition. So thank you, Sandy, for being with us. And I think that's everybody that's here. If there's any other board member, you need to get yourself in the queue so we can have you here. So do any of the board members want to make a comment before we start asking for comments from the audience or questions? Is there anything you guys want to say about yourself? Brenda, I've tried to cover everything you do, but I'm sure I haven't done it justice. So.
Oh, no, as far as individually, no. I think you hit that part pretty well.
Okay,
you had any broader things about the organization.
Richard, but you have anything you want to say in the welcoming comments before we take comments from the audience?
Well, I just want everybody on the call to come to Houston in June.
Well,
yeah.
They're all going to come. So, all right. And Sandy, did you want to make any opening remarks?
No, just that I'm glad to be here.
Well, glad to have you here. Okay, so we try at NARSOL to have an accessible board. We open our meetings Very few people show up, but we open the meetings where the state affiliates are notified and they can invite people, and we allow observation of what's being said. No, we don't generally debate in a board meeting. We're having board of directors official board business. We're not usually debating the board the people that are observing, but you are free to observe our board meetings. And I don't know that any other organization does that that's in this field of advocacy, but our board meetings are open. Sometimes we are open so you can have transparent insight into what we're doing. So I've got a couple people in the queue, and if anybody who's out there listening would like to get in the queue and ask a question, *6. And we often receive emails and phone calls, and we would hope that we could get some of those where we could be answering more than one person at the same time. It's like, why don't we have a presence in DC? I mean, that's a question I get. Probably not a week goes by is, why isn't Darcel in DC doing something in the halls of Congress? Why aren't we in the halls of Congress?
I would say we're not in the halls of Congress because we can't afford to pay anyone, and we don't have volunteers. It's probably one of my tenderest sore spots, is that, I like, as you pointed out, I do not get paid, and I have a day job, and my day job is in D.C., so I spend from 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock, plus commute time, wandering in and out of D.C. I work just off the mall, and it takes me about 15 minutes to get to some of the different government buildings where I could go and lobby. But we're not at a point yet where I could get paid to do that. And needless to say, I'm busy working, so I can't pop over there when the guys are there. So until such time as we either can hire a lobbyist or at least relieve me of my day job, then we just don't have the volunteers or paid staff to accomplish that task.
That answers that component of the question, but I would like to dig a little deeper and say that in addition to that, the registry laws are operated by the states. I know we have the Adam Walsh federal guidelines and recommendations to the states, but the there is no federal registry. So if the Adam Walsh Act were to be magically repealed tomorrow morning, the states would still have exactly what they have today operating. And it would be some time before states would be inclined to change that, because this is the way they've grown accustomed to doing business. So the battle is really in the states, not so much as in D.C. in terms of the battle against the registry.
There definitely is that, which is a comfort on my part. There are routinely, there's Adam Walsh reauthorization, which comes up regularly. Forget if it's every year or every other year. There are new national level problems, IML being a prime example, where we did actually try to get involved and do what we could to block that dang thing before it took effect, because of course that's much easier than getting rid of it when it's after it is. So there are things happening there, and I do think it would be worth our while to try to build up that presence, because I think our national lawmakers are suffering from the same problems that our state lawmakers are suffering from, which is they got no clue about the realities of what the registry is, who's on it, all the song and dance that we like to tell people about constitutionality and recidivism and all of those things. And just having those conversations and building those relationships could make a difference at the point that something does get introduced or an opportunity for something to get introduced comes along. So I do hope that we will be able at some point to start building up that presence and those relationships in D.C. so that we can be ready in the future.
So another common question is that a comment and a question we get is, you people are always just, you're doing these Mickey Mouse challenges. Why don't you just file a challenge to bring down the darn registry? You talk about tonight on this phone call, you're going to do a challenge against the sheriffs. I mean, what the heck good is that going to do to try to stop the sheriffs from putting up signs? For God's sakes, you're wasting time and wasting energy, wasting money. Why don't you go after the big corner? Why are you wasting time with this?
Well, now that you've asked the question, you want me to give you your answer? Larry and I have talked about that one any number of times, and I wish with all my heart that there were that one big case that's going to take it all down. But as Larry already pointed out, the registry's in every single state, take a case to the Supreme Court, but it's likely, because that's how the Supreme Court operates, it's likely to end up being very narrow, and they could rule that the registry is punishment. But what that would do is, as it did in Maryland and some other states where we've had ex post facto wins, it wouldn't strike down the registry. Overturning Smith v. Doe would say it's punishment. And saying it's punishment is going to help anybody who was retroactively harmed by the Adam Walsh Act, perhaps, which is no small victory. But it, again, won't take down the registry. So there really isn't that big case that we all wish there was that is going to take it all down. And again, that's one of the reasons that we are focusing state by state, because our hope is that frankly, the state by state is how we will start getting things such as Packingham and what's the Michigan case. You know, those cases are, yeah, the Doe v. Snyder, those are getting up to the Supreme Court.
So, and of course, I'm a little hesitant to say this with a conference coming on, because I run the risk of having a pie in my face or something even worse. But
get ready, Richard.
Registration. In and of itself, a registry scheme has to be analyzed whether it violates the Constitution. The mere act of having a requirement to register in and of itself is not unconstitutional. It would be constitutional to have registry schemes that were not that didn't break any aspect of the Constitution. Now, I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying that since the courts would have to look at each scheme to see if it violates something that does raise a constitutional issue, you could have a very benign registry that imposed no restrictions, no requirements other than mailing in a form maybe once a year, and no disclosure of the person's address. And it would be hard to argue that that's unconstitutional because it's so benign. And that's what they said in Smith versus Doe in 2003, was that this scheme doesn't impose any disability restraints. If you look at the opinion, on page 100, it says that's how they were able to uphold it. So you can escalate, as Michigan and many states have done, and you can cross over to where something is no longer benign and is very punitive, and practically every state has done that. But the mere act of registering someone, you could have a constitutional registry. So therefore, the courts can't say, under no circumstances can you register anybody at any time, because we register young men for the draft, we register people who own guns, we register people to vote, we register on and on and on. And merely registering someone is not unconstitutional. So that was some of the common ones. We do have people in the queue, so I want to try to go to take some of those questions. It's *6 if you have a comment or a question for the board. If you want to identify a particular board member you're directing the question to, that's fine. If there's no particular direction, then we'll just have a volunteer answer it, whichever one wants to take it. So area code 214, this sounds like the Dallas Metroplex, and you have all kind of wind noise coming in. So go ahead with your question.
Okay. Yes, it is the Dallas Metroplex. Anyway, actually, my question had to do with, in the last hour, I believe the lady's name was Pat. She was talking about innocence. And yes. A website was given, but I didn't catch the name of the innocent, the website, in regards to percentage of exonerations and such.
Did anybody happen to catch that? King was the one, and I don't know if he's still with us anymore.
Yeah, it did drop.
So that was Debbie that asked that question, and I didn't take the note on that. Now, we do have a fabulous note taker that's working for an arsenal, and hopefully it was captured in the notes. And if not, it'd be in the recording and the playback, which Andy will have that available in the coming days. So you'll be able to listen to it on playback.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. And I will be seeing you all in Houston.
Hey.
Well, thank you. All right. So *6, if you want to get into the queue, and we have this anonymous person that we were talking to earlier that I tried to answer his question.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I hope that my microphone is not too loud and obtrusive.
We wish everybody sounded like this, so go ahead.
Indeed.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for saying that. I'd like to thank everyone who works so hard and so tirelessly. We all know that you don't get paid, and we try so hard to call up our legislators when we're called upon. We thank you very much. I'd like to very briefly make three comments very quickly. First off, the first one was thank you, and I did that. The second one is this, and I wonder if you thought about this. You probably have. I'd like to ask the lawyers about if you have a civil matter, right? Because in 2003, the United States Supreme Court said this is a civil matter, not a criminal matter. Okay, with a civil matter, like a driver's license, if I decide that it's obtrusive or intrusive to me to somehow give all of my information to the driver's license bureau, I can opt out. I can say, you know what, here's your driver's license, stick it where the sun doesn't shine. I don't want anything to do with your driver's license, and simply not drive. The other thing is, if I get a civil judgment against me, I can always go and declare bankruptcy. In other words, I can opt out. Well, even if I'm called up for the draft and I have to sign up for that, which is a public registry, I could always say I'm a conscientious objector. So I have some sort of legal recourse there. So I wonder if you could respond to that. And very briefly, my third point is this. We all need to stand together, guys. Lately, there's been this movement to chip away at our numbers by saying the Romeo and Juliets don't count. Let's take them off. And the people who urinated beside a tree beside the side of the road, let's take them off because they really don't count. But I tell you that every blacklist, every government blacklist is bad and wrong, and we have to oppose it, and we have to stand together. Let's not settle for half measures. Thank you.
Thanks. So, Larry, I'll take that last bit if you're probably the remaining attorney person on the call, close to attorney.
We don't have anybody that I see that's qualified. I'll just say that he feels passionately, so I'll try to address it. But go ahead with your answer before I have you forget.
I was just going to respond to that last part about chipping away. That's always a challenge in our advocacy work. I know that at NARSOL, we make a point of saying as our public stance that nobody deserves what they get with being on the registry. The punishment comes elsewhere. The registry doesn't need to exist. So that's our straight out public direction. However, what often confuses people is that when we are going and talking to, especially talking to legislators, sometimes others, we can walk up to a lawmaker and say, we don't think the registry should exist. But that lawmaker is not going to be able to turn around and abolish the registry. And so you have to work with them and find something that they can do. And that's the distinction that often happens is, you know, you try to work with them. They're sympathetic. They want to see change. They know that the registry sucks, but you know, they're not going to be able to introduce a bill that says we're going to get rid of the registry. They could perhaps introduce a bill that improves the lives of some. And of course, it's going to tend to be those low-level Romeo Juliets and slashers and, you know, that sort of thing. And it's a struggle because you want to help everybody, but you got to start somewhere. You got to get your foot in the door. And so that's the constant battle and struggle that we face as advocates. So Larry, in terms of the other part.
I'd like to expand on that. And, sure. And I think I can give a real time example that'll help people. When you're dealing with lawmakers in terms of changing public policy through legislative advocacy, there are a lot of moving parts. It's a complex undertaking. And we don't live in a dictatorship in the United States. And you take a look at where you want to go, and then you take a look at where you can get to as a result. Those of you who just followed the First Step Act, it started and it was bipartisan because we recognize on this type of thing, you've got to have to prevent vilification, you've got to get bipartisan buy-in. So you had a group of Republicans and Democrats trying to reform the criminal justice system. And they worked deliberately for a very long time and came up with a final product. But then at the last minute, it got hijacked. And I'm using that term as legislative. We use that terminology. It got hijacked by a group of conservatives in the United States Senate, led by Tom Cotton from Arkansas. And so you've been working on something for years and years and years, and you're trying to make positive progress, and you're trying to get buy-in, because if you're in the U.S. Congress, you've got to get 435 members of the House, you've got to get a majority of those, and then you've got to get a majority of 100 in the Senate. So you're making concessions because everybody doesn't see things to life the same way as you do. So in the final journey on the Senate side, there were a group of conservatives led by Cotton who felt that the First Step Act went too far. Well, those who had been working so hard trying to make some improvement, they had a choice of just walking away from it. They can say, well, we're not going to get what we want. We'll just take our marbles and go home, and we'll get nothing in the way of reform. Or they took what they could get out of the Senate and to President Trump's desk. And the president did encourage, I think, a broader reform than what we got through his nephew, I think it is Jared Kushner. And we ended up with a very narrow reform, but it is a beginning. That's why it's called the First Step. Well, the same thing with the registry. I would challenge anybody who's listening to this, go to your state capitol and start shopping for lawmakers and tell them you would like to abolish the registry and find out if you can even get a sponsor. Now, a sponsor by no means assures passage. Only about 10% in my state of everything that's introduced actually makes it to the finish line. But just try to get a sponsor. And then if you succeed in getting a sponsor, start working that bill through the process and tell me how many concessions you have to make as you work it, because it's going to start out as abolishing the registry. And all of a sudden, before you get to the first committee, there's going to be extreme opposition and you're going to have to make concessions to not abolish the registry, but maybe narrow down the focus of your abolition. And by the time it gets to the end of the journey, you're going to be abolishing the registry for people who did virtually nothing. But I always ask people, if we can save some lives, if the registry is as bad as we say it is, and I do believe it's pretty doggone bad, if it's as bad as we say it is, should we turn our backs on whatever people we can save because we can't save everybody? Or should we save as many as we can and keep trying to save more as time goes along? Because like with the First Step Act, if all life as we know it doesn't end, and if we don't have a tidal wave of criminality, within 2 or 3 years, there'll be the opportunity to come back and expand the reach, and we can have a Second Step Act. Well, the same thing with the registry. You've got to start removing some people because you can't abolish the registry. If you can get a registry abolition bill through your legislature, I'm going to buy up all the damn U-Haul franchises I can get, because there's going to be a massive migration to that state, and that there's no legislature going to abolish the registry, in my view. unless it's a part of a nationwide thing that they all agree. Otherwise, they're going to become attractive places for registrants to move to. And you'd be crazy not to move there if you had the wherewithal to do so. And in terms of the other part of his question, I share with him completely. He's making the arguments that are dear to our heart. We all know that this is BS, that this is a civil regulatory scheme. No one doubts that. The problem is that the courts haven't recognized that there has not been enough well-developed litigation, and there hasn't been a desire of courts at the highest levels to hear this, because Supreme Courts generally get to decide what they hear. They're not obligated to hear appeals. You got one level of appellate jurisdiction, and the second level, the highest level, be it the state of the U.S. Supreme Court, they get to pick what they hear. And they choose not to hear things that we sometimes would think, well, gee, they should have granted certiorari to that. They did not. But I don't completely agree with him, because you don't get to opt out of all regulatory schemes that are civil. Civil commitment for those who have mental disorders, and let's take out the civil commitment for sexual offenders, because that's a different beast altogether. But when you're civilly committed because you have a disorder that makes you dangerous to yourself or to others, that is a civil commitment, and you cannot opt out of it. You will opt out of it when they deem you no longer to be a threat, that you no longer meet the criteria for civil commitment, and when you're adjudicated no longer dangerous. That's when you get to opt out of it. So you are involuntarily committed to do something. And you don't, most people I don't that I've known to be civilly committed don't generally run down and check themselves in and say, I want to be civilly committed. But that is a civil regulatory scheme. But in terms of the draft, you can claim conscientious objectors. We're not drafting anybody. We haven't since 1973. So all we're doing is registering people. And I don't know that one way or the other that you can conscientiously object to registering. That's something I don't feel qualified to speak on. But as far as I understand it, every young man between ages of 18 and 26 must connect with a selective service. And if they don't connect with the selective service and get their name in the data pool, they're not eligible for a host of benefits, including Pell Grants and financial aid. That's my understanding. I haven't been in that age since a long time. I was born during the Lincoln administration. So I've long since passed that age. But as far as I understand, that's what happens to young men. But we agree with you. We just the courts are not there yet. So hope that helps a little bit. Star
Wow, that was a long tirade, man.
It was a long tirade, but I feel passionately about what he said. He's right.
Yes,
it's crap. It's a punishment scheme called civil regulatory. And I have my own strategy about how I deal with that. I concede it's civil regulatory, and I use that to my advantage when I'm lobbying. I say, well, we can't do that in a civil regulatory scheme. We do. This is a civil regulatory scheme. The regulated entities, in most instances, can you think of anybody, whether it be the taxi drivers or the long-haul truckers or whatever it is, can you think of a civil regulatory scheme where they don't invite the regulated to be at the table? So I tell them, well, this is a civil regulatory scheme. You would like to hear from the regulated, wouldn't you? And they look at you crazy. And I say, oh, you're saying it's not a civil right? I thought it was a civil right. Which is it? So I use that to my advantage. So we've gone to this is a caller from area code 770. And I know that area code. Who might this be? You're on NARSL in action. Ask the board.
Hi, Larry. I signed up for this call just because of you, just because you're here and really enjoying the show. And, you know, anybody who didn't do that, well, I just, gosh, I think there's something wrong.
That sounds like one of my listeners' podcasts. Oh, that's too funny. So that's very sweet of you to say that. I was joking.
Did you stage this call, Larry?
So, well, I did tell the story, I think, on the podcast that I heard Rush Limbaugh, he used to play that on his show. He would say that he had a little blurb he would play where a woman said, anybody who thinks he's not the sexiest man alive has got to be a lesbian. And I made this comment on the podcast about that Rush Limbaugh. So it sounds like it's been adapted from the podcast. So, by the way, tell me about the podcast, Andy. What is that thing all about?
That is a really interesting question. So it's a weekly program where you and I talk about news articles of the week, and sometimes we have some guests. We've had King on before, and we've had a couple other attorneys along the way. And then we also we try and find something interesting, like some legal theory, so that you can go off of one of your tirades and how to twist people in knots on how their logic is twisted, and try and make it a little bit of fun. We try and kind of pick on some people here and there. And I'm the stupid guy, and you're the smart guy. That's the podcast.
Is it that simple?
Yes. No, it's not. But yes.
So, well, I'm going to do something I didn't plan for in the script. And that was very nice of you to say that. And I do believe that's one of our listeners for the podcast. But I'm going to do something that I didn't plan for, but we've got an empty queue. So I'm going to ask anybody who has attended the conference, any one of our conferences, to give a testimonial. Why? What did you get out of the conference? And why should people spend their hard-earned dollars to travel to Houston? Anybody who's attended an ARSL conference and has anything to say about what they took from it and how it's beneficial, and I would be delighted to hear that. And I see a longtime subscriber to the Digest here, Aaron. Hello there, Aaron. I think Aaron's in Michigan. Susan, Roger, all you regular attendees to the conference, get your star six and tell us why. And in the meantime, Richard, you're there making all kind of noise. You've been to a number of our conferences and you're chairing the committee. What excites you about coming to a conference?
Well, first of all, Larry, I get excited just to see friends and catch up, to talk about what's been going on in each. Just to have that social experience, and also to be among people who can empathize and understand where I'm at in my life, and that I can offer that in return. So that's a big part for me. The other part, of course, has to do with learning new tools and understanding more about what these laws are about. I mean, this is a big process, and we all come at it from different perspectives at different times in our lives.
So, well, our Connecticut affiliates just jumped in the queue. Cindy, what makes you excited about a conference? You got a lot of great work going on
about
here.
A conference.
Not giving Cindy the credit. Cindy has just settled a lawsuit with Windsor Locks to do what, Cindy?
It appealed the repealed the child proximity zone.
And that was done through attorney Paul Dubling, right?
Yes, it was. And we're onward and upward, looking forward to our next municipality.
So, well, congratulations.
We got 9 or 10 more to go.
Congratulations on that. And I'd like to have Paul on and do more of discussing about that. But you've been to a number of NARSL conferences. I've seen you around in Atlanta and different places we've been. So what excites you about coming to see us in action?
Well, I personally enjoy drinking at the bar. No.
Well, not shy about saying it either, huh?
Exactly. 2 years ago, I think we named a drink the Narsol. And of course, it's really a mocktail because it's sparkling water, cranberry juice, and pineapple juice. So yes, it's all the drinking I do at the bar. I agree with Richard about the fellowship. For me, that was the biggest thing, to realize that I'm not alone. I mean, I've been in this since 2015, and I started with just myself. And then a student out of Princeton, and then Richard. And so slowly we grew, but very slowly. And it was great to go to the conference. And it feels like family. I mean, I left my first conference and I went into a trench. I was depressed because it felt so good. And it's so tough out here doing what we do. So I think for me, it's a way to go and rejuvenate and remember that I'm loved and I've got a family and there's other people that have my back.
Thank you, Cindy. And not only that, you put on a great conference. I heard about it just a couple of weeks ago in Connecticut. So your healing conference. So.
Yes, we're continuing to get really good feedback. And, you know, the only disappointment was Sandy depicted it in her article that I think came out yesterday morning about the number of invitations who had gone out and the amount of people at the state level and in nonprofit organizations and people who do reentry services and the Department of Corrections, et cetera, et cetera, who ignored and didn't show up even for a 2-hour VIP breakfast. And I think that's a shame and it's arrogance. And anyway, it made me unhappy, but the conference was fantastic.
Oh, thank you, Cindy. We don't have any callers in the queue, so I think we're getting near the end of this segment. Mr. Producer, what do you say?
As you would say, let's fire this mother up. Let's shut this mother down.
So, all righty. Well, we will be doing, hopefully, I'm going to do my best to do one more call before the conference, and hopefully we can inspire folks to be on the call and to talk about the conference. This was kind of impromptu. I didn't plan, but there's a lot of good. I've gone to I don't forget how many. I missed the first couple, but I've been to most of the NARSL conferences, and I feel good about every one of them. And so I am going to say thank you all for joining us. I do have a couple of people to make contact with. Hopefully I can get a written some notes out to folks and with some contact information from for Adele. There won't be any contact information for King Alexander. He's a public defender, and he doesn't take the cases other than the ones that are assigned to him. So he's not able to be helpful other than just answering questions. So on that note, is anything else our board members would like to say before we sign off? Brenda?
Larry, I want to say thank you to you. Thank you to you for having this call, and you and Andy, you do a great job.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody who's stuck it through for the last 3 hours. Still quite a number of you on the call.
Yeah, over half of the people at the High Pointer were still here. So,
yeah.
So, so thank you, everybody. And so on that note, we're going to conclude this session of NARSL in Action. And good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.